Now it's time for the Southern Cross.
Southern Cross is back, and with us in studio today is Pacific Media Watch contributing editor Michael Andrew. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, good. You know.
Good.
Right, so we're going to continue on from that last interview a little bit and talk about West Papua demonstrations spreading across Indonesia.
Yeah, it's all going down in West Papua. I think it's quite, it's been covered quite extensively. But I'll just give a rundown, even if it's if everyone knows already about it. So the demonstrations broke out after a militia attacked the dormitory in the Javanese city of Surabaya, and that they pelted the students with stones and called them monkeys, and the police turned up, and it was a big raucous affair. But demonstrations have since broken out across West Papua and other Indonesian cities as well. And in response, the government has deployed troops to parts of West Papua to quell the demonstrations, and they've also issued an internet blackout. And this has obviously prompted condemnation from the likes of Reporters Without Borders and Contrast, who are saying that without the internet, West Papuans can't let anyone know about human rights violations, and reporters can't adequately cover the story. So it is it's very concerning, but all this is very much a crescendo of the building pressure, and there's obviously a lot of anger and a lot of resentment towards how Papuans have been treated. They're protesting the racism and the prejudice that they feel that is directed towards them from Indonesians, and all this is just an expression of their rage and their dissatisfaction. Mm. So it was bound to happen eventually.
Yeah. Mm. That's very sad. I feel like I just feel so sad every time we talk about West Papua.
Yeah.
Obviously important, like, movement, but it's just so, yeah.
Exactly. Mm. And so we've had like so many commentators are analysing what's going to happen, where this is going to lead. Quite a few people are saying this is similar to what happened in East Timor prior to their independence. There was just all this kind of rebellion and open protest and demonstration, and it was too much to suppress. It was too much to keep quiet.
Do you think it's likely that West Papua will get independence?
I don't think it'll be my personal view is I don't think it'll be as clean as East Timor, and that was really difficult, and there was a lot of, that was such a violent regime.
They had involvement from Australia as well, and that's been
pretty
criticised.
And Australia and New Zealand aren't speaking up on this. The Pacific is, and there are other countries that are condemning, and Indonesia's had an open invitation to the United Nations Human Rights Commission to come observe, come to West Papua and observe what's going on, but that's not eventuating. But that's probably going to be the catalyst for any kind of referendum or any kind of independence, is external observation from powerful countries or powerful bodies coming into Indonesia and West Papua, seeing what's going on and basically laying it open for the world. That's the only way it's going to happen. But this is definitely a start, having all this protest and all this demonstration, and it spread to Jakarta late last week. There were reports that there was an independence rally outside the presidential palace, and the Morning Star was raised. That's a big deal, because it's a 15-year crime to raise the Morning Star. If they catch you, you can go to jail for 15 years. And there are cases of people having been sentenced for doing that. So that's just an example of the oppression and the crackdown on West Papuans for exercising their self-determination or their desires for self-determination.
So you said New Zealand and Australia haven't really got involved in this. What sort of big nations do you think will get involved to sort of begin any sort of referendum or legal talks about it?
Well, it's hard to say, because there's so much politically at stake.
Yeah.
You'd think New Zealand would be one of the first countries with our, I don't know, we're perceived as being quite progressive and on the way, especially under Jacinda.
Mm.
But it's, like I said, it's a very sensitive political game. I don't know if any leader's going to compromise that. But yeah, the Pacific countries are definitely allied, starting to ally more with West Papua, especially Vanuatu, who I mentioned last week. Fiji have started to make some noise about it. But yeah, it does need that pressure from bigger countries to get involved.
And so you interviewed Andreas, who Sherry talked to last. What did you find out?
Well, we'll exchange ideas.
Let's talk about Andreas.
I was primarily interested in his experience as a journalist, and he's a media trainer as well, so he grooms other journalists, especially in the Indonesian arena, and equips them with the skills to do their job properly. And I was very interested in that because there's a lot of pressure on journalists. Indonesia's such an interesting place, seems like an interesting place to practice journalism, because you've got this, you've got all the, so many ethnicities, you've got so many cultures clashing, but also you've got the biggest or most populated Islamic country in the world. And Islam and the tenets of free journalism tend to clash on a lot of things. So I was interested in what he talks about in his book. And yeah, he basically said journalism and democracy is declining in Indonesia because a lot of journalists can't differentiate between their faith and their profession. And they tend to view the world around them through the lens of Islam, especially when reporting on West Papua, which has markedly different customs than what one would be used to in Islamic cultures and customs.
What faiths are in West Papua? Do you know?
There's a lot of Christianity, but it's not necessarily the faiths. It's more the, I guess, you know, it's not unusual for a lot of West Papuans to go naked and to go bare-chested, especially in the rural parts. It's like the clothes aren't that, you know.
Yeah, it's
I think it's more common in Islam to be humble and modest and cover yourself up, obviously. So that's a big issue. Reporters go to, Indonesian reporters go to West Papua and they see a woman bare-chested and they freak out and they, you know, it's like it changes
so
the way
lifestyle
they
differences.
Yeah,
quite
and then so they report on that to mainland Indonesians who read and feel like this it's an island full of deviants, and it just creates more resentment and more racism. And then you get terms like monkey thrown around because no one's reporting accurately and fairly without judgment, because you're, I don't know, you're perhaps compromised by a system that can be very judgmental. So he basically tries to tell journalists, leave everything, your identity, how you identify yourself at home. When you're a journalist, you're a journalist. You don't, you're not a Muslim. You're not a an Indonesian. You're just a, you're trying to amplify the voice of the society in which you're in, and you're trying to be a conduit. You're not trying to put yourself into the mix, you know what I mean?
Yeah, which so I suppose it's that extreme sort of, you know, you go into a job and it's like you leave everything at the door, like we're here to do our job, like this is, you know, you leave all your emotions and everything personal at the door, we're doing our job here.
Yeah.
But it must be incredibly hard though for a lot of people to separate that, particularly if that is your whole life, you know, you've been brought up with that and that's all you know.
Easier said than done, definitely.
Yeah, completely. But
I mean, he says there are a lot of newsrooms that are doing some soul searching and are looking at the way they've reported on West Papua for the last 50 years, in fact. And a lot of them are saying, yeah, look, we've covered it. We haven't covered it right. We've effectively increased the divide between Indonesians and West Papuans. And even if the difference lies in whether they want self-determination or independence or not, as a society or even as neighbours, we need to work together to create a more cohesive society. Because there are a lot of West Papuans throughout Indonesia, I mean, that are probably getting the benefits of study in Indonesia and whatnot. So these people are effectively part of the society, even though they want self-determination. They still need to be treated fairly, and the media needs to be a crucial role in allowing that to happen.
Mm. I guess it's hard because the political structure of Indonesia is so intertwined with religion, and you have to declare one of the six, I think, religions that they say exist. Like if you fall outside of that faith, if you're atheist, that's super hard. So I guess it's that thing of like, it would be hard to leave that kind of stuff just at the door.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. They're pretty much bound by the dogma that is precipitated at state level. So it's a very messy and entrenched ideology.
Yeah.
It's like I said, it's almost the antithesis of the idea of free journalism. But I think the way he said it, it is slowly getting better, despite the fact that journalism on the whole is decreasing. There are journalists who are starting to really push for free journalism, objectivity.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's positive to hear that.
Absolutely.
Shall we move on to Papua New Guinea now?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is this was big news.
Yeah.
And then West Papua broke out, but Papua New Guinea, which is besieged by issues that puts pressure on the media, like in West Papua and Indonesia as well. There's environmental issues and political issues that make it very hard for journalists to cover adequately and accurately. But there's one broadcaster, EMTV, and they do a good job. They're fairly unbiased, they're fairly accurate, and they have consistently broke big stories. But anyway, their head news reporter, who had been in the job for 6 years, just suddenly got the sack last Monday. This is from the one outlet that does good news, and this guy is kind of the one in charge. He was doing all the good news. He was managing the news team, and he was kind of at the vanguard of proper journalism in Papua New Guinea. He suddenly gets the sack. And then there's all this pressure and all this asking why, and it turns out that he did a story on Jacinda Ardern at the APEC summit in 2018 where she declined to use the government-provided Maseratis. So the government went and bought like 40 Maseratis before the APEC summit. And just plain corruption, really. Like sports cars for government delegates. And Jacinda Ardern refused to drive one. Because she's, and one of the reporters did a story on it, and then they got a message from the board saying, don't run that story. And the board is like a government-funded board kind of thing. It's quite messy. And then they ran the story anyway. So that was one of the reasons why they decided to sack this news guy, is because he decided to run that story. But it was a whole range of other things. And it basically turned out that because he had decided not to censor certain stories, they were now firing him 6 months down the track, which is just plain... It's like censorship. It's just a commercial and governmental crackdown on free news.
Yeah.
So that was why it was a big story. But he got reinstated 2 days later.
Oh.
Because it was so much pressure.
Yeah.
So much pressure. And everyone was like, this is so fishy.
Crazy,
this is so weird that you would... Why the board and why the CEO, the acting CEO, would fire a good journalist for doing good news. And it just was a PR nightmare.
And saying it's because you didn't there wasn't enough censorship. But then that looks weird because,
But see, Papua New Guinea media, it's so, it's not free. It's always bound by some commercial interest or some political interest.
Mm.
Since Peter O'Neill, the former PM, has moved on, it's become a lot more independent because the current government is trying to support it and trying to let it do its thing. But it's still... so very much compromised by Australian companies that have shares in the board and whatnot, so they can't really do what they need to do to make Papua New Guinea a better society. But that's just a crazy example of the kind of stuff that happens in Papua New Guinea.
So
like
crazy,
people get fired,
they just, yeah,
and reinstated, and, then, yeah. and there's all this, and then the public are very much involved.
So were the public really upset? So the public were really upset, and therefore that the board, the government board, was like, oh, okay, we'll reinstate him.
Well,
because everybody's so upset about it.
The CEO said to fired the guy, and then made one of his deputies the acting news head in the interim. They effectively refused and walked off the job for the first time in 30 years.
Oh my gosh.
This outlet EMTV had to replay the news from the night before.
Wow.
Because they had no news.
Because they had no one in the newsroom, so they had to just rerun it. And obviously the public are watching yesterday's news.
Yeah.
This is awful.
We've seen this.
This is old news.
Oh my gosh.
But that's great. It's like a unified media. I doubt it would happen here. If someone got the sack unfairly.
Nobody was going to.
There'll be media. I'll take his place. So many journalists will come. It's just an example of a very turbulent but eccentric nature of public
news. Are the public generally quite aware of the how messy it is?
Through Facebook. Everything goes through Facebook. And they've got such a finger on the pulse of everything that goes on, which is great because you've got a really involved media who feels like they're connected with these journalists who engage them directly. It's a great example of how a media can work and how it can use the public to its advantage and also have that support as well. So, yeah, it's good he got reinstated. It's a plus for Papua New Guinea journalism.
Yeah. My goodness, that's such a bizarre story. But anyway, thank you so much, Michael. Read all about the Pacific Media Centre updates at pmc.aut.ac.nz and asiapacificreport.nz. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
That was the Southern Cross.